Yes. I know all over this area they bring in their recorders. They're sitting outside there, rows of them, recording our singing. You laughed at that. And you smiled at it. Oh, you are the prettiest people in all the world. Just look at the beauty. Look at these pretty people. And we get a treat tonight. Well, it's a treat for me anyway. Years and years ago, there was this young girl. I didn't say she was old now. I just said years and years ago she was young. I never said she was old. Does that make you old just because years and years ago you were young? Anyhow, no, years and years ago, Barbara teamed up with me, and she was the one to help me get this Wednesday started right here. Right?
And the transition from Swedenborg to here.
Yeah. And, well, yeah, I was going. I was actually living a number of years before I even met her. But anyhow, she used to be very much a part of us here. And then she chose to go off and she went on an adventure. But she didn't kick us out. She just went on and included something else in her life. And now she's going to give us some of her thoughts. And you're all going to end up loving Barbara Christensen. Yeah.
My spiritual mama, I have been away too long, and I'm seeing some familiar faces, but a lot of new ones too, and so that's really exciting because some of these stories I'm about to tell you haven't heard before, so that's good. Some of the others are like, oh, there she goes again. So yes, I found Millie in the spring of 1991, and this talk tonight is going to be about answering God's call. And Diana can tell you my printer wasn't working, so I'm missing a page. So I'm just going to make it up as I go.
No Joseph.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, but the Joseph page didn't print. But anyway, answering God's call, because that's something I've been really struggling with for the last almost 10 years, starting in 2010. But to find my call, how God has called me, and you know, so many of the songs we sing here, God use me, you know, and what was the next one, or the one before, here I am, Lord. You're saying to God, here I am, use me, you know, I'm ready. Well, be ready, because sometimes God taps you on the shoulder and says, oh yeah, let's see it. So it was actually a very sad time for me when I first found Millie, and my angel at the time was my hairdresser, because I had just lost my mom. She had died suddenly at age 59 of a brain aneurysm, and I would see my hairdresser every month for a haircut, and I would cry, because she was my therapist and hairdresser, and she said, you need to find Millie, you know, and you need to go to Angel Church, which is over there. And I'm like, I trust my hairdresser 30 years later, still looking good. and went and met Millie, and I know it was March because this beautiful woman was dressed in a green dress, and she was hanging shamrocks around the church, and she said, hi. And I said, hi. And she said, help me hang some shamrocks. So we did. And then she took my hand, and she gave me a message from my mother, and I was home. Didn't stop the crying. I still had a lot more crying to do, but it brought me into this place where I could really start knowing that you know that you know, and so on. I really know. And I had so much to learn from Millie, because she is truly an embodiment of teaching love, preaching love, if you will, and just oozing love. For Millie, I learned that I could be her favorite Barbie doll, and you could be her favorite Mary, and we could all be her favorites, because she taught me that there isn't a shortage. You can have everybody in the big hug, you know, and that was kind of new to me. You know, you had your best friend or your favorite brother and, you know, maybe one other best friend if the first one didn't work out, but to really learn that you could embrace everybody, even the ones that are really different from you, whether it's politically or they talk funny or whatever, you know, it's like, wow, she taught me how to love. So I hung around here for about 25 years because I'm a slow learner and she had a lot to teach. And, you know, I'm not, these notes, they're just there for to look official. I'm just going to go with spirit talking through me, really. But all the time that I spent here and kind of apprenticed, if you will, under Millie, there was this other little part of my faith and a calling for ministry that I never dared to speak aloud. I had lost my brother when we were both in our 20s. He had brain cancer, and I shared his journey. And at the time, watching his hospice team come in and care for him, I was like, wow, you know, hospice chaplaincy. Well, that's interesting. But at the time, I had trained as a journalist, and I'm working for a newspaper, and I'm doing all these things. I meet Millie. She's working for a newspaper. By day, we work at newspapers. By night, we're talking to the angels, and that's pretty good stuff, you know? So I was so busy mourning the loss of my mom and then my brother and then my dad from Alzheimer's and all these different kinds of losses that I never spoke out this little other thought that was still there, like this, you know, what do they call them, those little worms that get in your head. But anyway, 2008, however, I went out to dinner with a friend and I was complaining about my job and she said, well, what would you like to do instead? And I said, you know, at this time I'd worked for the same company for 24 years and I was in a rut. And I said, I've never said this aloud before, but I'd like to be a hospice chaplain. And she said, well, why don't you? And I said, well, I don't want to go back to school. I don't want to have student loan debt, that's for sure. And I have this really great job where I get 5 weeks of vacation a year, and I get home at 4 in the afternoon, and it's not a job I take home with me in my head or in a briefcase. I had every excuse in the book for why I would not do this little thing that had been in my head for over 20 years. And we changed the subject, and she moved away to Maine. We were kind of having dinner because she was moving away, and I didn't think about it again until May 12th, 2010, a day that will live in my life forever. At the time, I had been taking on different roles where I worked, and now the boss had said, I want you in an HR role, and I want you to lay off half of the employees. So I'm suddenly dealing with grief and laying off colleagues I'd known for over two decades, and it was a really tough time. But I thought, well, at least I'm secure. You need an HR manager to keep laying them off until you turn out the lights, you know? But that afternoon he came in and closed the door, and I thought, okay, who's next? And he said, hey, now that we have so few employees, I'm going to cut your job in half, your pay in half, and you're going to lose your health insurance, but I hope you'll stay with a good attitude. And I felt like I'd been kicked in the gut, you know? I mean, I had served this man and God, but probably more this man than God at that point, for over 24 years, and I remember just kind of muttering, how am I going to hold on to my house? How am I going to have health insurance? You know, I mean, just like all these material things became really scary. And thinking I'm going to lose everything I've built, you know. So he wanders down the hall and a couple of the coworkers come in and they're like, what's wrong? And I said, well, this just happened to me. And they're like, oh. And of course they're thinking, poor you, but am I next? Is their other thought. So I said, I'm taking the rest of the afternoon off. And I went home And I typed an email to all my friends and family. Again, this was 9 years ago, so I didn't have that many friends and family because I was still learning how to embrace everybody from Millie. But I sent out this email, and I said, this is what happened. And to be honest, I am not handling this well. It's only been an hour. But I need a plan. I need to know what's going on next in my life. And I want you to pray that God quickly reveals what's going on. Now, I'm going to go to a couple Bible references real quick before I continue the story, because the parts of the Bible that are hard for me sometimes are like when the angel appeared to Mary and said, hey, you're going to get pregnant and you're going to give birth to this Messiah, and God says this is going to happen. Hope you're good with it. And Mary says, well, how's this going to happen? And the angel says, don't worry, it's just going to happen. And Mary says, but I've never slept with a man. And so the angel says to her, well, you know, your Aunt Elizabeth, who's in her 90s, she's 6 months pregnant, so anything is possible. So Mary goes, okay, well, sign me up. I'm a team player. So then Joseph finds out suddenly the woman he's engaged to is pregnant, and an angel appears to him because he's not sure what to do. And the angel says, you know, it's really okay. This is, she didn't cheat on you. This is really a cool thing, and we want you to be on board with it. And Joseph says, okay, I'm on board. So you know the story. Then Jesus is born, he grows up, and he needs some people to go with him. And so he goes to these fishermen who are pulling in their nets and working with their family members, and he goes, hey, Simon and your brother, and just walk away from your dad, and come on. And you two over there. And I'm just going to read directly from one of these pages where... Just a side note, I'm sorry I'm all over the place, but it's really worth hanging in here. I'm reading some of this stuff from the Message translation of the Bible. If you ever pick up the Bible and you're like, oh, what are they really trying to say? The Message is a contemporary translation in language that we understand. So I highly recommend it. So Jesus is asking all these people to come along and join with him, and it says they didn't ask questions. They simply dropped their nets and followed. It says that in Mark, and it says it in Matthew, that they didn't ask questions. They were just, okay. Well, I'm a little more questioning. I think maybe it's part of my training as a journalist, but God, you want me to just do whatever you want me to do, right? But how am I going to hold on to my house? And so fast forward back to that same day, May 12th, 2010. It's a Wednesday, fortunately, so I get to come here on a Wednesday night. And I go to Millie and I say, I can't help you tonight. I am a mess. I'm just going to sit over there. This is what happened to me. She's like, okay, just go sit over there. So it gets to the part of our time together, and she says, let's all just send some love and prayers to Barbara. She's going through something right now, and she's a mess. That wasn't your word, but that's where I was. So prayers come at me, and I'm, you know, the Kleenex have run out, and I'm ready to deal with a new day. And we get through the whole evening, and all of a sudden, everybody's getting up. And because I was so much in my pity party of one over there, I didn't notice that my friend from Maine was sitting over here. And I stand up to go, and she's in front of me. She's like, what's wrong? And I said, what are you doing here? What's wrong? What are you doing here? She said, I just flew into San Diego. I got a cab. I came straight to this church service. What is wrong? And I told her, and she said, you don't have all those things you were saying 2 years ago. God is saying you don't have any more excuses. Are you ready to become a chaplain? I'm like, whoa, this is like Paul on the road to Damascus, you know. I need to be hit over the head. And I'm like, wow, what did it take for God and the angels to get her on that plane on the very day that my boss was going to do all this? And then I wrote that request for prayers, and I said, I want to know soon. So by 9 o'clock that night, I knew where I was going next. I went home and I slept like a baby. Of course, I didn't know what was lying ahead, because you know what? We're not supposed to have a crystal ball. We're not supposed to know everything that is ahead. We would be pretty depressed if we knew, because we would focus more on the negative than the positive. But anyway, long story. Well, I still got a few more minutes. So within a month, I was a volunteer at San Diego Hospice. By September, I was enrolled in seminary, where I had to kind of struggle, if you will, with telling the truth about where I went to church, because I was going to a Methodist seminary in Dayton, Ohio, which is not the most progressive place on the planet. So for me to say I'm coming from a background of spiritualism for 20 plus years, and we talk to dead people, they talk to us, and it's really wonderful, that was not going to fly with my professors. So I will admit here that I would say, well, I go to a non-denominational church, which wasn't completely accurate, but definitely Christian-based, yet we see the truth in all sciences, religions, and philosophies, and that has always worked for me. And that is why I feel like I'm wired to become a chaplain, because a chaplain goes into a room with a patient, and while I don't go in and pretend to be a Buddhist for somebody who has that as their spiritual practice, I go in with love and respect for their practice that works for them. Because I know from my time here that truth is truth, and it can be found in all of these different things. So seminary was really hard. And in the meantime, my boss got wind that I was going to seminary, and he figured, well, you got one foot out the door, so here's the door. So by January 2013, I got my last paycheck, and then I decided to take a tumble and shatter my shoulder socket, which didn't get repaired for another 2 years. So I really couldn't write papers because I was either in pain or on pain meds. And either way, your brain doesn't really work. So I was doing a lot of, hey, God, did I misread that whole little thing that happened with the plane and Maine and my friend? And God said, no, right now you're learning how it is to live in chronic pain, because you're going to be encountering patients who are living with chronic pain. And you're going to be able to say to their family members, this is what it's like, and you need to give this person, cut them a little slack, because you are not your whole self when you're living with chronic pain. So I thought, okay, I'll accept this lesson that I couldn't have learned in a book or from a professor talking to me. And it was a profound lesson, and it also was a time in my life where I had to ask for help. I couldn't put on a bra. That's not optional for me if I go out in public. I'm sorry. I needed help. I couldn't cut a tomato. I couldn't do a lot of things until 2 years later, Kaiser finally said, oh, I think we'll do your shoulder replacement now. And I won't do jumping jacks, but they put me back together and gave me my life back, which allowed me to get back on track with seminary. And Debbie, where you are, there you are. Debbie, at one point, when I first started this journey, she said, oh, you need to meet this woman I know at this other church who's a chaplain. And I did. And she said, oh, it took me 7 years to get through seminary. And I'm thinking, well, I signed up for the 3-year program. I'm going to get through in 3 years. 7.5 years later, I finally got my seminary degree, which was really hard to do in your 50s because your body wants to sleep. It doesn't want to be typing papers until 2 or 3 in the morning. And I used to feel like there are no words left in me. I have nothing left to say. And I'm sorry, I'm babbling a lot because got this storehouse of words now. But the point I really want to make to all of you is that while my call to answer God involves $100,000 in student loans, lots of frustration, and feeling like, am I ever going to make it? I kept revising my goal, which is now to be a hospice chaplain before I'm a hospice patient. And I think I still have a chance. So unless my doctor tells me something different, I'm on my way. But answering God's call is the little things, too. And answering God's call is for all of you. It doesn't matter if you have a seminary degree or you have the title minister before or after your name or the Master of Divinity, which is the most pompous degree name I have ever thought of. And it's I could put it after my name if I wanted to. But I'm not a master of anything, and I certainly don't feel worthy of divinity or divineness. That's Jesus. That's God. That's the Holy Spirit. But I am so blessed to have finally listened to that call that God planted in my ear. And I just want to give you a couple tiny examples of how you can answer God's call just by listening to your own inner little voice. I'm going to talk about three patients real quick. One, I had been seen through San Diego Hospice for quite a while. When I first met her, she did not speak at all. She had Alzheimer's, and her family had stopped coming, and she just shut down. And I said to my volunteer supervisor, I'm not sure I'm doing any good because she doesn't speak, and I sound like a blathering idiot. And he goes, keep going back. But I would notice that her eyes would light up when I would arrive on Tuesday afternoons. And so we, you know, sometimes I would just push her in her wheelchair and still didn't feel like I was making a great connection, but her eyes told me something. And then we were nearing Christmas, and one day I thought, listen to this voice, start singing Christmas carols. So I started singing. She chimed in. She did every verse with me. The nurses are walking by like, oh, my gosh, we haven't heard her speak in 3 years. You got her singing every verse. Well, lots of studies have since been done that the music is deeply embedded and can be pulled out of somebody with dementia, Alzheimer's. But all that singing led to her talking, and it led to her having a 2-year relationship with me, which in the hospice world is wrong because you're only supposed to be in hospice for 6 months and then die. So, but that's the irony of hospice, is that when you're getting good care, you start to thrive. And she and I kind of became buddies, you know. But one afternoon, I have juggling school and work and all these things, and I had been here on a Sunday afternoon, and I was teaching one of the healing classes, and we finished up early, and I thought, I'm going to go see Margaret. So I drive to the college area, and I walk in, and the nurses said, oh, thank God you're here. She needs to die. She's trying to die, but we think she's been waiting for you. I only went on Tuesdays, so this was a Sunday. And I said, okay. So I go in there, and she's facing the wall. She's on her bed, and I started to say the Lord's Prayer, and I could see tears coming down. And then I started to sing Amazing Grace and more tears. And then she took her last breath. And what a gift she gave me to be in that sacred moment at that time. But I listened to the nudge. I listened to, oh, it would feel really good to just go home rather than going to the state college area. You know, I had probably 2 papers to write, but I listened. And then there was another guy, I'm going to call him Victor. He was staying at, he was in the San Diego Hospice, had a facility in Hillcrest for a while, and he was in a lot of pain. And because it was close to my home, I would visit him much more often. And my girls were little then, and on Easter Sunday, we would always have hidden the eggs. They'd come out of the house and with their little baskets and look for eggs. Well, that Easter Sunday, there's no eggs to be found. And all of a sudden we hear this crow, caw, caw. And we look over at the crow, and they have taken all of the eggs, dropped them, eaten out the yolk, and left the rest of the eggs on the street. Now, fortunately, the girls thought that was funny. And I had to get here to sing in the choir and be involved here. So part of me was like, well, I've got extra time. And then this voice said, go check on Victor. It's on your way. So I walked in, and the nurses, the nurses on duty came over. Oh, my gosh. He died 10 minutes ago. The family keeps bothering us, saying, will you please call her? Will you please call her? We want her to come and sing to him one more time. And we explained to them, it's not your shift. You're not here. And I said, well, here I am, and I have enough time. So I walked into this tiny little room packed with about 40 relatives I'd never met before. And I stood at the foot of his bed. He had let go on Easter morning. And I got to sing to him one last time. That doesn't make me divine. It doesn't make me anything. It's just that I'm learning more to listen. I'm learning to listen to that voice, that whisper that is the Holy Spirit whispering in all of us. But we get so caught up in our lives and we think, well, no, I have to be here. Oh, I've got 5 extra minutes. Now let's go on our cell phones. Put the cell phones down and let God be the one who talks to you. That's the best message you're going to get all day. And you're going to change somebody's life when you do. And it may be you're just going to listen to somebody on a bus bench for 5 minutes. Or see somebody at a table in a restaurant sitting alone and, hey, can I join you? You never know how you're going to change that trajectory just by your presence. And here we learn about, well, we learn the truth that there is no death. And there's a lot of people who don't know that yet. And if you can take that out into the world to just one person, it's going to ripple out. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. I'm just speaking from my passionate place that this woman taught me a lot. This environment taught me a lot. And unlike the fishermen who said, no questions, sure, we'll follow you, I was emotionally kicking and screaming when I realized I had to say goodbye to this place and go to a mainline denomination to be ordained in order to get a hospice chaplaincy job. Being here and being involved here didn't count in the world where I wanted to go and get a paycheck. And the day I took Millie out to lunch, we both cried because she's taught me more than any professor can ever teach me, and she goes to the source, and the source is God, the source is love. And I'm not as compliant as those fishermen or Mary and Joseph, but I'm learning to listen, and I'm learning to follow. And I'd like to take one more minute now and shut up, but ask all of you to close your eyes and just think for a minute or two, what is it that God is calling you to do? What is it can be a small thing or a big thing that you've forgotten about or just pushed away because you just thought it was too big. But just think about it now for a minute. Gracious and loving God, we thank you for this time together, this time to know your love, to know your presence in our lives at every moment. When we stumble, you're there to lift us up. As the tears fall, you're there to wipe them away. You keep planting hope in our hearts even as we are sure it's died. We just ask now that you show us how to listen to your call on our lives, that we truly can say, God, use me. Amen. Thank you.
Barbara. Thank you, honey.
Thank you, Melanie.
You know, if we could all just share the pathway that brought us to who or what or wherever we are right now, it'd be interesting, wouldn't it? You shared your pathway, honey. Thank you.
Thank you for being a huge part of that path.
Well, I'd love to have been any part of that, so thank you for saying that. And I hope that there's truth in that, that I was helpful, but I'll tell you what, you're on your way, honey. You followed your heart. In your heart, the part of us that talks to God. Barbara, haven't seen her for so long. I don't see much of her anymore. She's a busy little girl out there in the world, but we used to always be together, didn't we? Yep, that little house, I'll not forget your little home. Just a wonderful little home. Okay, well, you touched my heart, that's for sure.